Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Welcome to All Sides Weekend. I've been looking forward to this program for quite a while. Our guests are Barbara Zook, arts diva from the Columbus Dispatch and Environs, who has come in from the country to join us today. Thank you, Barbara Zook.
Good to be here.
And our special guest is Roland Valliere, who is the new president and chief executive officer of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra. I know this because I emailed you the second day you were in your office to ask you to come on this program. I didn't want to email you on your first day, so I waited. Welcome.
Well, it's a delight to be here.
We thank you for coming. We're going to have some talks about the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, very much about its future, which is going to be a very exciting one. We'll talk about the arts in Central Ohio, which, in my opinion, are thriving despite the gloomy economic times, and after a while we'll open the phones and ask for you to participate as well. Mr. Valliere, first of all, your first day in the office, you went in and you sat behind your desk and you put your hands on your desk and you looked around. What did you find?
Well, I found tremendous opportunity, which really is the reason that I came here. I came in from Kansas City, where I had been the executive director there for a period of time after a number of other symphony orchestras. And then I became a bit of an entrepreneur, trying to figure out ways to connect particularly younger audiences to classical music. And had the good fortune to have support from some of the major national foundations to find ways to do that. And I think here in Columbus is a tremendous opportunity for us to move from what, you know, of course, has been somewhat of a challenged situation to one which is really a leader and provides a real resource and tremendous value to Columbus and the surrounding region. And what I mean by that is that what we need to do, and we, I mean the collective we as a field and as an industry, is figure out how we can embrace, you know, some of the tools that are available to us in the 21st century that were not available to us in the 20th century to make classical music all the more accessible and important in people's lives. And I think there's a tremendous opportunity for us to do that here in Columbus in a way that I'm very excited about.
You certainly are a person with a great deal of experience in orchestral management. You've had posts in Kansas City. You've had posts in New Hampshire. And the first line of the press release announcing your arrival here uses the word entrepreneur, which I loved. Can you expand on that a little bit, the role of an entrepreneur? That's not something that one often hears or sees in context of arts administrator, entrepreneur, but there you are.
Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is, successful executives, no matter what the field, be it Gordon Gee at the university here or Jack Welch from GE, you know, have a real entrepreneurial bent. Because what that really means is the ability to, in a way, it's where the arts can be all the more valuable to people in society and particularly in the educational area. Because it's really about developing the right right-brained thinking, the creative part of one's thinking. I mean, the thing that's really valued in industry and in business, I think above all else, or certainly at the top of all else, is the ability to think outside the box, to solve problems creatively, to innovate, to be able to sort of envision solutions that aren't, you know, in front of your nose. And that's really what being an entrepreneur is. It's about having – it's about imagining solutions or things that really are solutions to problems.
One thing I wanted to ask you about is it's been my gut feeling for a while, I could very much be wrong, that the model of sitting in a theater on a Friday night in a dark theater watching an orchestra, that model of audience participation is less relevant now. The way the concerts are delivered to the live audience are less relevant now. They need to be reinvented.
I'm really glad that you said that because I've been thinking a lot about that, and actually that is where there's tremendous opportunity here. Orchestras traditionally have thought of themselves as being in the concert production business. That is, you produce a concert on Friday night at 8 o'clock at the Ohio Theater, and we play wonderful music at that point in time, and you have the opportunity to enjoy it. Kind of like a Tibetan sand painting. You know, it's there at that point in time, but after the time has passed, it no longer exists. Really, through the advances in technology, and this is what I mean by 21st century tools, and it really is the internet, so far as a distribution vehicle, a cheap distribution vehicle that simply wasn't possible before. The notion that the orchestras are in the concert production business, I think, requires rethinking. Because really what the orchestras are in is the concert distribution business, the content distribution, distributing the content.
Just happens like we are here.
Yeah. I mean, the content traditionally is distributed, if you want to look at it that way, on Friday nights at 8 o'clock. We hope you're there if you are. You know, it's a wonderful opportunity for you to enjoy it, but then it's gone. But now, and there's some wonderful things going on in an experimental kind of way, there's the opportunity to distribute that content anytime, any place, cheaply. So I think we need to sort of broaden our sense of who we are as an institution here in Columbus and in the field as well, to say we really are in the music distribution business. One of the ways we distribute that content is live, and it's a beautiful, wonderful way to do that. But there are other ways we can distribute that content as well, anytime, any place. For example, the Berlin Philharmonic just launched the Digital Concert Hall. You can now subscribe online to the Berlin Philharmonic and enjoy the performances when they happen to be happening or at another time, at a place and time that's convenient to you, the listener. It's wonderfully produced, it's cheap to do, and it makes their concerts available in a way that simply wasn't possible before. Now, that's not a replacement or a substitution for hearing the Berlin Philharmonic in Berlin live and in person, which really is unique and obviously irreplaceable. But it is an option.
And if you don't happen to be in Berlin, it's going to be a problem.
You could be in Nome, Alaska. All you need is a broadband connection or any place. And so that's just one sort of example. The Philadelphia Orchestra is doing some very interesting things in terms of broadcasting their concerts, again, over the internet, into senior citizen and community centers.
San Francisco has been very much in the vanguard for that as well, I think.
Yeah. They're doing some very innovative things in media. And there are a number of – of course, the Metropolitan Opera broadcasting into theaters and now also online.
Let's talk about that, because a lot of traditionalists, I count myself among them, said, oh, that's going to be awful. We're going to be watching La Traviata in a movie theater. I've never seen an opera done like that before, and I go back a number of years. I thought it was thrilling, and I never missed them.
Well, you see, that's really interesting, because one would think on the surface that – and this includes Berlin and Metropolitan – that, you know, this is going to sort of dumb down the experience and it's going to really sort of cannibalize what it is that we do. And actually the response – and I had developed something called the Concert Companion
a few
years
ago. We're going to ask you about
that later, yeah. And there was a similar response to that, which was particularly upon those that really love and cherish classical music, was that, oh, my God, you know, this is going to really, you know, detract. You know, it's going to be a negative thing going forward. And actually it turns out to be just the opposite. Some of those that enjoy the Berlin Philharmonic broadcast the most are those that actually love and enjoy the music. In fact, there was a prominent music critic who told me that he actually enjoys the Metropolitan Opera broadcast in the theater more than going to the Met itself.
I think he called
at Lincoln Center.
I agree completely, wholeheartedly.
Part of it is the ambience, to be able to go in with the, you know, with a bucket of popcorn and sit down and really sort of, you know, feel a little more comfortable and maybe in the way that you dress and that sort of thing. It's just a different kind of experience. So I think the key thing is that, you know, the pie is not finite. It's kind of like the Chicago Cubs. You know, when the Chicago Cubs were broadcasting their, you know, when they were considering broadcasting their local local baseball games, there was a lot of uproar about that. Thinking, oh my God, we're going to cannibalize, you know, attendance at Wrigley Field. And it turns out the baseball team that's had the most dramatic increase in attendance live has been the Chicago Cubs. So it really is increasing the pie, you know, in that way, and I think that's really where there's real opportunity here.
Barbara Zook, I wanted to ask you to give an assessment where, because you've covered the Columbus Symphony for many years, and you probably know more about the organization artistically and institutionally than a lot of us. Where is the orchestra now? Where are they positioned to be, both qualitatively and otherwise?
Sure. It's interesting with all the problems that the symphony has encountered over the years. There is still a base audience for that orchestra that is there no matter what happens, no matter who's conducting, no matter what's going on in the front office. It's really heartening, actually, to go to concerts and see seats filled even when the orchestra has been going through very public problems. Now, having said that, I think I was really enjoying what you were saying about building the audience in new and different ways, because that's one thing the institution is really lagging way, way behind. I think probably because there hasn't been a solid direction institutionally in a long time, and I would really like to see, which gets back to the kind of, forgive me, revolving door that there has been in the front office for a long, long period of time. So I would hope that some of those things could be institutionalized quickly and build on that solid base before it starts to wither away.
When I asked you earlier, your first day at the office, Roland, sitting at your desk, what you saw, what you felt, when you first heard the orchestra, what did you hear?
Well, you know, that actually is a vital part of the reason that I came here. This orchestra is fantastic. Mm-hmm. These musicians are terribly committed. The quality of playing is very high, frankly, much higher than I was even anticipating. I had the good fortune to hear the Beethoven concert at the end of last season, and that George Manahan conducted. And the level of playing was extraordinarily high, and obviously that's the core of what we do. I mean, in a market where, to some extent, we're competing with the Berlin Philharmonic. I mean,
well, you are now. If everything is high tech, you mm-hmm. are. You are. Know, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so we've got to. You know, it goes without saying, I think, that the product or the orchestra itself, you know, needs to be consistently at the highest level. We need to strive for that level of excellence in everything that we do, because we need to compete in an increasingly vital way.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I do believe that the Columbus Symphony is far better than its image, even locally. I think it's always been a very fine orchestra, and I wonder what can be done to build the image of the orchestra locally and beyond Columbus to what it really deserves to be.
Well, yeah, I think. Well, first of all, it is a new day. You know, and maybe you've heard that before, but you know. It is true. We're looking forward, not in the rearview mirror. You know, Einstein's definition of insanity is doing the same things in the same way and expecting different results.
Right.
So we're not going to do things in the same way and expect, you know, different results. We're going to do things differently while at the same time preserving the core, which is the wonder and beauty of great symphonic music. But it really is in the delivery systems that there's the opportunity that we must acclimate. You know, I mean, you know, there's no – I don't think orchestras have any divine right to exist. There's, you know, nothing.
Some musicians might disagree with you.
Well, I mean
– I'm just kidding.
Well, no, it's true. Well, you know, you look at industry
don't
and you
call
see that –
musicians.
You know, you see that companies that were at the top of their game, you know – that were really impacted by significant shifts driven by innovation. You know, the telegraph would be one of them, not a company, but an industry, and time again. And you can see where there's been sea changes that have taken place through innovation. Many of those companies were not able to acclimate and adapt, and therefore they had a painful death. That's what we really must do is acclimate and adapt and utilize these tools as I'm trying to describe in a way that really, I think, points us towards a bright future.
We're going to take a one-minute break. My guest is Roland Valliere, who is the new president and CEO of the Columbus Symphony, and Barbara Zook, who writes for the Columbus Dispatch. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend, and I'm going to invite your phone call shortly and your emails. We'll be back in 1 minute. Welcome back to Open Line. There I go. I knew I'd do that once. Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy with Roland Valliere from the Columbus Symphony and Barbara Zook. Our phone number, 292-8513. If you'd like to call in and join the conversation, you can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. 292-8513. Everybody should know. ColumbusSymphony.com, that is the website. It's a wonderful website. It's got everything you need to know to buy tickets, to participate in all of the Columbus Symphony's many offerings. The first classical series concert is October 2nd. It features the return of someone who made a huge impression on the community, the young conductor Alondra de la Parra. If you haven't heard her before, you need to come to this concert October 2nd. October 10th, 9th, 10th, and 11th, Gunter Herbig conducts Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, all in the Ohio Theater. ColumbusSymphony.com. Mr. Valliere, as we were off mic for a bit, we were talking a bit more about innovation and about delivery systems. I wanted to ask you first about Concert Companion.
Right. Well, you know, that was really, in a way, an accident. You know, we had the good fortune when I was with the Kansas City Symphony to be invited to participate in two national foundation programs, the Andrew Mellon Foundation program and the Knight Foundation's Magic of Music program. And the idea there was to provide funding to the orchestra to sort of seed fund innovation and trying some new things to reach new audiences and develop an artistic profile. And so I became, and when I was with the orchestra, I was really increasingly frustrated by the fact that we were not able to attract and retain younger concertgoers on a consistent mm-hmm. basis. By younger, I mean 25 to 45 years old, and for a variety of reasons for that. But I began to look around, and I noticed that museums with audio guides had a big impact in attracting younger audiences and making the art form or that art form available or accessible in a very sort of important way. And the same thing with opera, you know, with the Metropolitan Opera's seat-back super titles and a number of virtually all opera companies now utilize supertitles as a way to sort of make opera more accessible to especially younger people. I began to wonder whether there might be a similar kind of approach for the performing arts and for symphony orchestras. And that really was the seed. And so through that funding, I was able to sort of develop that idea. And the notion was, if you think of audio guides as a kind of oral enhancement in real time of a visual experience that deepens that experience while you're there, I thought, what if we flip the coin? Can we have a kind of visual or a textual enhancement of a oral experience, music, in real time? And so the technology was developing to the point where through Wi-Fi access points and those sorts of things, we could do this. So we try. I put together a team, including the fellow that runs Metropolitan Opera's Met titles, and Robert Winter, a prominent musicologist at UCLA, and a team that came out of Apple's QuickTime development program. And we cobbled together as sort of a what if. We used PDAs at the time, personal digital assistants, and we said, you know, maybe this can work. We did an initial round of testing with the Kansas City Symphony and with the Aspen Music Festival and the Philadelphia Orchestra. And the response, we did focus groups and surveys. They loved it. Then we did a second round of 100 of these that we distributed at Avery Fisher Hall with the New York Philharmonic. We did a presentation at a national conference in Pittsburgh. And then the Hewlett and Packard Foundation put up some additional funding to do some testing in Oakland with Michael Morgan and the Oakland East Bay Symphony. So basically what it was real-time listening notes.
But it's something you hold in your hand. It's like a Palm Pilot, yes?
It's exactly what it was.
And it doesn't talk to you, but you look at it and it gives you all the information you need to know that might enhance your...
It's basically a digital program guide or a digital program book, and there's a menu, and one of the things are the program notes, the static program notes, the kind of things you would get in a program magazine mm-hmm. that you can toggle through. You know, it's got a backlit screen, so you can see it in the dark, but in a way that doesn't, you know, that's not distracting for others that are not using it. So there's the static program notes. We actually had a live camera on the conductor, so you could actually look on the device and see the conductor. And the idea was we were actually going to have cameras. We actually tried this at Avery Fisher Hall during the rehearsal. We were robotic cameras where the individual could actually choose what you want to see. So you could actually see the musicians or there's a pianist or whatever the guest soloist might be. You could look at the soloist. So it gives you some options while you're there to sort of get an onstage view, much like the Berlin Philharmonic is actually doing now on their digital concert hall. But the core feature was the synchronized notes. The live synchronized concert commentary, where you are getting kind of a play-by-play. It's kind of thing you would get in a pre-concert lecture, but you're getting it in real time, and you're reading it. So it's synchronized with the music that says, hey, you know, listen to the oboe here. The quiet oboe is now moving on to the flute. That's the first theme. This is called the exposition. What that means, that's the first part of the sonata allegro form. And there it's sort of giving an insight into the piece, sprinkled with some anecdotal kind of information. So that's what it was.
And you mentioned something else briefly about iPhones, some new project you're looking at now.
Well, it just, you know, and this is really, again, you know, somewhat serendipitous. You know, you need to embrace the, you know, when the bus comes by, it helps if you have the right change. You know, it's sort of to embrace that opportunity. And it just so happens that there's a company in San Diego called Instant Encore, funded by this fellow that loves classical music and has the resources to do that. And the whole notion is Instant Encore is providing technology tools to orchestras and the classical music to help them acclimate. It's one of the very things I'm talking about. And so one of the things he's doing is making a an iPhone app. There'll be other apps for other mobile devices, but iPhones got the largest share. So the first one is the iPhone. So you go to the iPhone store and you get an iPhone app that's branded with the orchestra itself. So we actually have a Columbus Symphony iPhone app that's in production. I hope to have it for the October 2nd concert, but if not, we'll have it shortly thereafter. And what you'll get is when you go, you'll be able to buy tickets through the app. You also can buy tickets to Instant Encore's site itself, which is instantencore.com. But you'll have a Columbus Symphony iPhone app that you can go and download to your mobile device, to your iPhone, and you'll be able to get program notes, insights into the concert schedule itself. There's also some social networking parts, so you can share information with other people related to that particular concert. You can, as I said, buy tickets. And one of the things I hope that we'll be able to do, either independently or through the iPhone app itself, is incorporate the concert companion kind of commentary. So the idea is you'll be walking into a concert hall and probably say, ladies and gentlemen, please turn your mobile phone on. Just put it in vibration or ringer off
mode. Whoever thought we'd get to see that day.
That's interesting.
Let me give the phone number, 292-8513. My guests are going to put their headphones on so they can hear the calls. 292-8513, all sides at WOSU.org. We have a call on the line from Perry. Hello, Perry. Are you there, Perry? Perry.
I was just hoping that you might comment about the Cleveland Symphony. I have a friend there, and I was with them last weekend asking how we might hear their concerts, and they were just talking about local radio or perhaps on the web. Is Cleveland moving into this same high-tech area of improvement?
I can't speak to Cleveland because I really am not, you know, I mean, I know obviously the Cleveland Orchestra, but I don't know what their plans are. So far as I know, and this is as of last night when I last looked, I didn't see anything on the Instant Encore site. And there are about a half dozen orchestras or so that have apps already out there. You can just go to the iTunes store and put in the St. Louis Symphony or the New York Philharmonic. The Indianapolis Symphony, and actually you could download those apps and they're free. I haven't seen a Cleveland Orchestra app yet, but it might be in motion. And I haven't seen any evidence that they're looking along the lines of what I'm describing, but they may be. I may just not be familiar with it. I mean, the opportunity here really is, you know, the train is, you know, heading out of the station.
Mm-hmm. And I'm so get on.
Get on the train.
Well, we, you know, in Columbus, I don't intend for us to be the caboose. We want to be the engine.
I need to ask, too. We need to switch gears a little bit. We'll come back to that. 292-8513 is the number. We have a music director search going on. Everything old is new again.
Yes.
Let me ask you, Barbara Zook, of the people who have been conducting recently. We've had Alondra de la Parra, who made a lot of impression here.
Yes.
George Manahan, people speak very well of him.
Very Jean-Marie experienced.
Jean-Marie what's your sense of where that search is going? Who should be the music? What kind of artist? What kind of – don't get specific, but what kind of artist should be the music director of the Columbus Symphony?
I'd like to see someone with – perhaps more music director experience than some of the past music directors we've gotten here. I think typically the search committee or the board thinks we have to have a young, energetic person to come in. And that's wonderful. Of course, you want energetic. Age doesn't necessarily matter. With age does come a certain amount of experience. And I think that this is a quite experienced orchestra at this point, and there's some very sophisticated listeners out there as well. And I think the orchestra deserves to have someone with some numbers and some real opinions about what they are going to do with a certain piece of music. So in this case, I would say experience would be wonderful.
Where is the search going around the music director currently?
I mean, first and foremost, we need a superb, extraordinary musician who's an effective and dynamic leader. And so, you know, that's a very, it's an important and challenging job description to bring this sort of multiplicity of skills that one needs in that position. So it's not easy to find, you know, someone like that. I mean, what we really need is a clone of Simon Rattle.
There you go.
Something that would be great. Yes.
Well, is it harder also for an orchestra that isn't in the top tier financially?
Well, this is where I mean it really is the full package. I mean, you know, and what I mean by that is this vision I'm trying to articulate really at its core is a change in business model.
Mm-hmm. Right? Interesting.
I mean, we need to sort of rethink who we are and the way that we, again, the collective we and certainly and also the singular we being the Columbus Symphony, the way we do business at our very core. and again, sort of broaden our notion of what that is, from delivering, you know, from producing concerts to really delivering great music. Because the orchestra is the vessel. It's not the content. The content's the music.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the orchestra is simply the beautiful vessel to deliver that music effectively to people, but not just in the concert hall.
That's what I was trying to get at. It's outmoded now to expect it all to stay in one building at one in real time. That's just not the way it is anymore.
Well, it's just like, I mean, look at other industries. The newspaper industry would be one, you know, that's being really challenged by basically cheap distribution that makes it possible for anybody to put out a shingle and say, hey, I'm a journalist. You know, some of that's good and some of it's bad, but it just is. Mm-hmm. And we can sort of bemoan the fact that, you know, there's certainly a downside as well as an upside to all of this. But it is, and we're not going to change that. So we need to figure out where the opportunity lies and embrace it and then and innovate going forward. And certainly the music director's role in that is absolutely vital. And why I say Simon Rattle is because, you know, Simon is a visionary, articulate leader and a consummate musician.
He is the British-born music director of the Berlin Philharmonic, who had a huge career. He actually revived an orchestra in Manchester in England for years.
Birmingham. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I mentioned earlier the Mellon Foundation's orchestra program and that we were part of that in Kansas City. The Birmingham Orchestra was part of that program as a guest as well. So I had a chance to look at a little more closely at what – and Simon was there at the time – that actually what he was doing in Birmingham, the kind of commitment. I mean, he had many opportunities to move on to other places, but he stuck with Birmingham because he had really invested himself into making that orchestra, you know, something special, not just in terms of conducting the concerts themselves, but in terms of the educational programs, the quality of life in that community, really investing himself in that community to make the orchestra all the more indispensable.
The number to call is 292-8513. Give us a call. Participate in the discussion with Roland Valliere, the new president and CEO of the Columbus Symphony. And Barbara Zook is here as well from the Columbus Dispatch. I'm Christopher Purdy, 292-8513. You can send us an email as well to allsides@wosu.org. You brought some brochures and some marketing tools. Just giving a look at that. First, I want to make the point that we focus on the classical series, but that's only part of the story. The Columbus Symphony has wonderful pops concerts and family concerts. They are in schools. They have a wonderful outreach program as well. What are you, the new president, looking forward to artistically in the coming year?
Well, and it's really a mix of programs. We have, you know, we're wonderfully privileged to have Gunter Hirbig as our artistic advisor. A seasoned, you know, an incredibly effective and wonderful conductor and a former music director in a number of places. So, you know, he'll be overseeing the season, conducting three concerts, which includes Mahler's Ninth Symphony, which is just an unbelievable work. You mentioned opening with Beethoven's Ninth. You know, that's one of the, of course, you know, the Desert Island pieces. You go to Desert Island and take that piece with you. So, you know, that's great. So he's really anchoring the season on the classical series side. And then we have nine guest conductors. And the opening concert is actually before the first subscription series concert, which is on October 2nd with Alondra de la Parra, as you said. Is sort of, in fact, I just saw something yesterday. It calls it one of the rock stars of the upcoming conductor generation. So, you know, we know that she's something special, as are many others that we have on the series as well. And so a number of – in terms of programmatic, you know, pieces, there's a number of chestnuts. Of course, you know, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony I mentioned. There's the Emperor Concerto with Andre Watts and Stravinsky's Firebird later on. Peter Serkin, you know, closes the season with the Brahms' First Piano Concerto. And it's just a real mix of performances that I think are going to be really special. And we have, of course, six concerts on the Pop Series at Veterans Memorial Auditorium, which I understand has been refurbished. It is now in its
place. Sounds very good there. It does. It sounds quite good in Veterans.
Yeah, it does.
Yes.
It's surprising, actually.
We were all very pleased by that. You have Barry Douglas, who's been a favorite soloist, coming back. You have Diane Reeves coming back to give a program on Sarah Vaughan. So there's quite a variety going on. There's a lot to do. There's a Bruckner concert coming up in March. I do want to make the point that WOSU-FM is the broadcast home of the Columbus Symphony and that all of the Saturday evening Classical Series concerts beginning October 10th are broadcast live here on the station. 292-8513 is the number. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Let me ask you, Roland Valliere, your own favorite music.
Well, in a way, it depends what day it is, and and you know, and what I'm in the mood to listen to. I did my dissertation on Stravinsky's Rite of Spring.
That must have been a hell of a dissertation.
yeah, and you look at the facsimiles of that, and sort of the initial etchings, and you know how that work started, and you sort of look at its development and how it unfolded and progressed over time in his mind. It's quite remarkable. So that's always been. Having been a percussionist and a timpanist in a previous incarnation, you know, that piece is really. And having studied with Vic Firth, who was my mentor in longtime legendary timpanist with the Boston Symphony. You know, seeing him perform that piece at Symphony Hall in Boston was always a favorite of mine. So
now, when you bring up the Boston Symphony, that's a classic case of how marketing has to change things, because there's the old line of the Friday afternoon concerts of the Boston Symphony. They've been doing them for literally 100 years, and some of the same people are kissing each other and greeting. They've been doing that for 45 years in these concerts, and there's not a lot of movement, or they're never used to be the sense that one had to really cultivate a new generation. Mm-hmm. And I would think that marketing-wise, you are not really going to focus on me in my 50s, nor should you, really. I mean, you're talking about 25 to 45, the younger audience.
Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is, you know, if you look at a number of the marketing studies and surveys that have been done, and you look at the most salient attribute of people that, you know, regularly attend orchestra concerts, you know, they tend to be, depending whether it's single tickets or subscribers, anywhere between 55 to 65 years old. But the most salient attribute is they had an introduction to music when they were young. Mm-hmm. They took music lessons. They played an instrument. They sang in chorus. They took a music appreciation class. They were exposed to music in school at an early age. So the seed was planted. And then maybe went off and had a career, had a family and that sort of thing. And then later on, when they had more discretionary leisure time, came back and became a regular concert.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. We're going to take a break for 90 seconds. Don't go away. Go to your phones, 292-8513. We'll be back shortly with the remainder of All Sides Weekend with Roland Valier and Barbara Zook. I'm Christopher Purdy. Thank you, Emma Fett. We are back. 292-8513 is the number. We're talking about the Columbus Symphony, and it's a whole new day with their brand new president and CEO, Roland Valier, and Barbara Zook with the Columbus Dispatch. I think I'm going to ask you both, but I'm going to ask Roland first. People always talk about the arts being a business, and we're in a business now, but it seems a little confusing. So can you focus for us? What business are we in now?
Yeah, I think at its essence, you know, we really are in the business of connecting the music to people.
Period. You know? That's very, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and I like to say, I mean, really sort of theme that I'm sort of, trying to articulate is total access. That is access to our music anytime, any place. So that's sort of one pillar. And as I look at this, I think there really are two. One is the idea that we can distribute our content in the concert hall and outside the concert hall, and so-called space and time shift it, meaning that you can enjoy it wherever you are, and time shifting mean whenever you want to enjoy it. So we hope you come to the theater and enjoy it then, because nothing will replace the singularity of that kind of experience. But if that's not convenient for you, maybe a subscription to the Columbus Symphony means you can get the content as many times, wherever and whenever you want. You came to the concert, you loved it, you want to hear it again? Listen to it on your iPod. You're a snowbird, and you can be here part of the year, but you happen to be in Naples, Florida in January and February. Enjoy it down there. Even watch it in your home entertainment system or on your television or however you want. We need to broaden the idea of how we deliver the content that we have in a way that makes it accessible to people. Not for free, but in terms of when you buy a ticket, the price of admission gives you admission to the content anytime, any place. And there are really important educational tentacles here. I began to say just before the break that, you know, the attribute, the most salient attribute of people that traditionally enjoy live performances is that the seed was planted when they were young. Unfortunately, in many cases, that's no longer true. We all know what's happened in many places with regard to the music education programs in the schools. But again, there's opportunities for us to embrace tools that can help us make that content accessible to people wherever they are. The Concert Companion was one effort to do that. I just saw last night that David Finkel.
The wonderful cellist.
Of the Emerson String Quartet is doing, he calls them mini lessons. He actually, if you go to his website, I don't know if it's the Emerson String Quartet, I think it's his own website, you can actually see him giving cello lessons. Yeah, they're brief, 5 minutes, something like that, online for people that just want to hear what he has to say. It's kind of a mini master class.
But he has that personality, too. He's a very outgoing kind of a person. He's got a very winning personality. So I think that combination with artistic excellence is really hard to beat. I do want to know, though, what's on your iPod.
I'm a real mongrel. I mean, okay. I've got a mix of music. I'm a huge Beatles fan.
Good. Excellent.
In fact, I had done one version of the Concert Companion to Strawberry Fields Forever because it's a song that has a tremendous story behind it. In fact, I just ordered the two new sets, the mono and the stereo set that just came out. So I'm a huge Beatles fan, so you'll find an entire Beatles catalog. He's a Beethoven fan as well. I think I have something like 30-plus recordings of the Emperor Concerto and the complete symphonies and everything, and all the piano sonatas and that sort of thing. Stravinsky I mentioned. I just listened to Berg's Violin Concerto last night, which I just love that piece. Have a few different recordings of that. And
that would be very interesting for the Concert Companion because there's such a story around that whole epoch of early 20th century music in Vienna. That'd be great to be able to write about.
Well, actually, that's an interesting point because in a way, music is a language of sorts.
Sure.
And particularly with contemporary music, not that the Berg Violin Concerto is necessarily contemporary because it was written, in the early 20th century, but it's a piece which is for some a new musical or an unfamiliar musical language. And so giving audience members tools to sort of, you think of music as a language, this is sort of a translation of that language for people that are not familiar with it.
Let me ask you both. Let me start with you, Barbara. Where should the Columbus Symphony be 1 year from now? If we do this show a year to the day to next year, what should you have experienced in the past 12 months?
Exciting concerts, obviously. Full houses. Hopefully a new music director that's going to carry on the good traditions and bring a lot of new direction to the orchestra. I just hope for the best for the Columbus Symphony. It deserves it, and the community deserves it. And I do believe that there's a lot of support out there that needs to be tapped, and I'm hoping that this gentleman can do some of that. I did have a question for him, though, if
Please
I can
do.
Squeeze that in. In talking about all the technical ways in which we can listen to music these days, what can the Columbus Symphony bring that why listen to the Columbus Symphony when you can listen to the Berlin Philharmonic or the Cleveland Orchestra? What can the Columbus Symphony bring to audiences they can't get someplace else?
Well, because, I mean, it's an excellent question. We need to be indispensable to our community.
Right.
The Berlin Philharmonic or even the Cleveland Orchestra is not going to be indispensable to our community. It's not all about technology. In fact, it's not about technology at all. It's about moving people and impacting their lives. So, and our musicians are really committed and terribly committed and very talented in that way. So these tools are not a substitution or intended to replace the live experience of connecting with people, no more than here we are in this room communicating live, but at the same time we're broadcasting out to people that are not here. It's a different dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting down at the dinner table, having a conversation, it has a certain dynamic, a certain importance to it.
So I just want to expound on that. That's brilliant because I think what we're talking about is we are adding to the way one experiences music. You're not replacing anything. You are adding. It's plus one. That, I think, is what we're talking
it's
about.
It's 1 + 1 = 3.
Right. Exactly.
And that's really what we're trying to accomplish here. But I want to say one thing. I mean, I'm trying to articulate a business model, and this really, I think, is the way of the future. And I think there isn't the other answer to your question is that is sort of the train getting out of the station. If we're in front, Apple wasn't necessarily the first to develop the iPod, but they were the first one to sort of put it all together in a way that was simplistic and was typically easy to use and was approachable for people that were not into technology. And I think there's an opportunity for us, even though there's interesting things going on in different places, for us to really sort of build a business model around that. So this is not tangential. It's not supplemental. It really is core. It's part of our DNA. But at the same time, this may be the vision, of where the bus is going. And we're in the process of figuring out, who's on the bus to get us there. but there needs to be fuel in the tank in order to get there. So, you know, we've had a successful year last year financially, which is an indication that we're turning the corner. We're going to finish the year in the black, which is wonderful, and I think a testament to the incredibly hard work that the board and others have done. But, you know, these are tough, challenging economic times, and we don't have a safety net. There's no endowment. There's no cash reserve for us to sort of rely on, so we've got to make sure that we can sustain ourselves financially, as we're working very hard to do going forward, so that we can invest in the future in the way that I'm describing.
One, I'm going to be the bad guy here.
Yeah.
One point I want everybody to hear carefully is that for all the people who were up in arms 6 months ago, 8, 9 months ago, when the symphony was having so much difficulty, and everybody, including people in this room, had opinions about that, if all of us bought tickets to concerts and paid to put fannies in seats, there would be far less of any kind of financial difficulty. So I really want to make sure, and people hearing this, let's step up and buy tickets to these marvelous concerts. And they are marvelous concerts. ColumbusSymphony.com is the way to go. They're starting October 2nd with a Beethoven program with some fantastic new pieces. There's a trombone concerto in that program with Alondra de la Parra conducting.
The bass trombonist of the Berlin Philharmonic.
Thank you very much.
Who actually was instrumental in the digital concert hall as well. So I'm interested to sort of pick his brain.
Like to have him come in and talk to us.
Yeah, and I think that's a fantastic piece. And we certainly are committed to performing new music. So that's going to be, you know, Beethoven is on that program, but it's not the only selection on that program. The program in total is going to be quite dynamic and quite enjoyable.
I thought it was also interesting the other night, the New York Philharmonic's opening night was televised live with Alan Gilbert conducting his first concert as music director. The first half of the composer of the program was what I guess you'd call contemporary music, a brand new piece, and then Renee Fleming did a 35-minute Messiaen piece. Mm-hmm. So that's really a shift there, because you don't see that. You don't see that very much, that kind of dangerous, if you will, but very exciting programming.
Hmm. Well, you know, actually when Bernstein opened up what was then Philharmonic Hall itself back in 1962, I believe they opened with a new piece at that time. So I think we can't afford to be a museum per se. We've got to consistently reflect and perform the music of contemporary composers, but also at the highest level. Everything we do needs to be excellent across all spectrums and all periods of music.
And let's remind people, I think the point bears repeating, that when you're talking about technology and really having to get on the train, because that's the way it is, and it means more, and more is always exciting, you're talking about 1 + 1 = 3, as you said. You're adding other options than attending the concert live in the theater without denigrating or taking that experience away.
Well, you know, concerts have become, in many cases, a kind of passive experience.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And it's a sort of sense that, and they were not actually that way at the time that many of these pieces were premiered. And so it's become a bit calcified in certain places, and we really need, and these tools provide the opportunity for more for sort of an interactive or engaging experience.
We have a call from Sonny, who wants to talk about the Youth Orchestra, which is dear to a lot of our hearts. Hello, Sonny, are you there? Are you there? Okay, we lost our call. We'll try again shortly. 292-8513 is the number. We're having a little technical problem with our headphones, but we will muddle on and talk to each other as well. Again, I want you to, Barbara, I want you to identify some concerts you're looking forward to this year.
I want you to pay attention,
first of all.
Well, can I just have a follow-up question to our guest of honor here? We were talking about the budget and the problems and the things the orchestra's gone through, and why I think Christopher and I both applaud a lot of your new ideas, but what is it going to cost? What is the bottom line there? And will you have a hard time selling the board on paying for these things?
Well, look, at the end of the day, like any business, be it for-profit or not-for-profit, you know, we need to produce a product that really resonates with customers. And if we're playing fantastic concerts in a way that is really well received, that really moves people and satisfies them in terms of what their expectations of going and making an investment in the Columbus Symphony is, in whatever fashion that might be, then we're going to increase our market share. And what I mean by that is any business can't, you know, there's no such thing as being stagnant. Either go forward or you go backwards. Mm-hmm. And while being a not-for-profit will never cover our cost in full through earned income or ticket sales and rely to contributions on some extent, the truth of the matter is we need to increase our user or our customer base. Now, in my view, as I'm describing, that means not only in the concert hall, but otherwise as well. So while, you know, an admission, while a ticket to the Columbus Symphony may reflect the price of admission to the concert anytime, any place, we need to increase that customer base, or if you want to put it this mm-hmm. way, increase our market share. If we can do that, then we'll build momentum and the future will be extremely bright. But if our market share or our customer base is declining, then we have a real tough time making a case for why this orchestra is indispensable in this community or why any orchestra is indispensable in any community. So that's the challenge for us.
I think what you're describing is going to go a long way toward building buzz, and that's a word I kind of like mm-hmm. to use. And we haven't been buzzed for a long time nope. in concerts in the Ohio Theater in the model of sitting. I mean, we have because a lot of them have been artistically wonderful, but you're giving us, I think, something to – talk about, something to really look forward to, and some new kind of thing that really not enough of us know much about. And I think that's very important. How do you think this is going to be introduced into the – what's your timetable for introducing
this? Well, look, what I'm describing certainly is no silver bullet. It's a way of thinking, a way to define ourselves going forward. But one thing I've learned, you know, in the last several years on my sort of extended research project, you know, from after I left the Kansas City Symphony, was that innovation is about trial and error. It's really a process not unlike scientific discovery. And that is you try stuff, you have an idea, but innovate means it's new. You know, you're pioneering something new. You're taking an idea and trying to make it concrete.
So you
stop
really
and you
change, right.
And you don't know until you actually try it how mm-hmm. the market or how audience or how customers will respond. And so if you have – and you can't control the timing of the market, which is really to some extent what happened with the Concert Companion. But I think things are beginning to sort of get to the point of critical mass as you look at what's going on. So I think the timing for us is quite good. But it takes time. We need a runway. We need time to try stuff and then refine it and then build from that experience going forward. We need to listen. We need to be focused. We need to be clear. But at the same time, we need resources to move forward. And that's absolutely vital.
When you first met the board and you first came here and were interviewed, I'm sure that went on for quite a while. Were you was this kind of innovation important to you? Were you getting a receptive – obviously, they hired you, so obviously that's something. I'm just saying, did you have to sort of break through any kind of resistance, or were they really ready to listen to this kind of new approach to audience development?
Oh, I think absolutely. You know, Martin Ingalls, who is the CFO at Battelle, is the chairman of the Columbus Symphony's board, and he's an incredibly visionary, dedicated chairman, and we're incredibly blessed to have him.
And Battelle is all about experimentation, let's face it.
That's right. They say that, I think the title in the brochure is 75 yeah. years of innovation.
Right.
And that's true of the executive committee and the board as a whole. So I think we're well positioned. I certainly have been as clear as I could be about my ideas about moving. And the truth of the matter is, I mean, the latest thing I've been involved in was a venture with the Juilliard School. That really was about creative thinking, which I think does apply here. Creative intelligence. If you think of it this way, there are kind of three kinds of intelligence, right? There's native intelligence, so sort of, you know, traditional IQ. And then there's been a lot of talk lately about emotional intelligence, the idea of that you need to be able to sort of, you know, be effective socially, to communicate well with people, and that can be learned to some extent. And then perhaps a third kind of intelligence is creative intelligence. Some of the things I mentioned earlier on in our conversation, the idea of sort of a think creatively, the very things that the arts, I think, are sort of rooted in, right-brained thinking, to solve problems creatively, and those sorts of things. And I think the arts, in terms of education, can play a very critical role there, and the Columbus Symphony can as well. So it's not necessarily about, training, kids to be violinists. We can and should do that. But more broadly, it can be about having a real important role in the educational process itself in terms of thinking creatively and developing the so-called creative intelligence.
In our last 2 minutes, I just want to make sure that we cover the youth orchestra base, because Columbus Symphony, one of the many things they've always done very well is they've had youth orchestras and mm-hmm. cadet orchestras. Where are you on that?
Well, we have a very strong education program, and the youth orchestra program is reflective of that, and we're very proud of that. And you know, part of the key to the future, an important part of the key to the future, is our continued and increasing investment in education. But again, I think we need to take a look at that as everything in terms of our business model moving forward and how we can be innovative in that way. Some really interesting things going on. Teach for America, which some may be familiar with, is a wonderful program where graduates of top schools go into particularly inner city schools and on a volunteer basis and enhance classroom teaching. There's actually a new program which was launched in the performing arts or the arts, not just the performing arts, called Music Corps, kind of a Peace Corps for the arts that I'm very interested in taking a look at and perhaps getting involved with here in Columbus.
It's my hope you'll come back every few months and talk to us and give us an update and make sure that everybody understands what's going on with the Columbus Symphony. Change is good. Change is dynamic and exciting, and I think that's something that you're really going to bring to the table. You just did it at this table.
Yes, absolutely.
Exciting people a great deal, but what you're talking about for your future, your vision of the Columbus Symphony's future. In our last minute, do you have any last words?
Well, you know, obviously,
come
you
to
know,
concerts. Buy
come
tickets.
To concerts.
Come to concerts. Enjoy the concerts. Come to concerts, enjoy them. You know, one of the things we're going to be unfolding is a series of town hall type meetings because I want to have the chance to engage with individuals that are patrons and supporters and attendees of our concerts to hear ideas and have a chance to interact with them. We haven't announced the schedule yet, but there will be some of those coming up. But the main thing is come and enjoy the concerts. Let us know how you think we're doing. Tell your friends about it. And, you know, make a contribution because we do need your support in a multiplicity of ways to continue
and
to go forward.
And don't forget ColumbusSymphony.com. I'm Christopher Purdy. Thank you, Barbara Zook. Thank
great
you,
Roland
Valliere. ColumbusSymphony.com. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org.